don't use the master bedroom because Mama still uses that room. This is the room I use. He opens French doors into a room with a massive four-poster king bed and another set of French doors that leads out to a balcony. I can hear the ocean, I say, walking to the balcony and opening the doors. The air swirls around me as I step out and lean on the railing. Oh, this is lovely.
Yes, it is.
I turn to find him staring at me, pure lust and happiness in his whiskey-colored eyes. I can see why this is your happy place.
And you just got here, he replies with a smile and crosses to me, pulling me into his arms. Thank you for coming with me.
Oh, I'm the one who should be thanking you, I reply, and hug him tightly. I love how small I feel in his arms. He's a big man, tall, with broad shoulders. I feel safe here, in this place, and with this man. I let my guard down, cautiously and a little at a time. There are spirits here. Two. No. Three.
What do you feel?
He asks quietly, as if he knows what I'm doing. I feel a few spirits here, I whisper, but I don't sense that any of them are malicious. They're attached to the house, not a person.
Do spirits attach themselves to people?
He asks with surprise, as if he's truly beginning to believe in what I do. Oh, yes, I reply, and that's not always bad either, but it can be.
Interesting.
I nod and lean against the railing again, breathing in the salty sea air. The palm trees around the home are moving with the light breeze, and I can see the white caps of the waves in the moonlight. I glance back at Beau, and am surprised to see a woman standing behind him. Hello, I say, cautiously. She's not living. She's short, and as round as she is tall, it seems. She's dressed in a maid's uniform, with a white apron tied around her ample waist. Her mocha skin is soft and lovely, her black hair pulled up under a white hat. Beau spins and looks in the direction I'm looking, but can't see her.
Who's here? He asks.
I'm Lyselle, she says softly.
Lyselle.
His brows climb into his hairline, and he's blinking rapidly, like he's seen, well, a ghost.
I'd like her to leave.
Chapter 12. Beau. Mallory's eyes widen and then she frowns. She doesn't want to hurt you in any way. No, she wouldn't. I shake my head and rub my fingers over my mouth, not sure how much to tell her. I trust her implicitly, but I'm not used to feeling vulnerable. And this is one of the things I feel most vulnerable about in my life. It certainly ranks in the top five.
I can ask her to go, Mallory says and reaches out to touch my arm, gently rubbing my bicep. She says I calm her, and I believe her because I've seen it, but she's come to calm me just as much. Her eyes are on me, not on the spirit standing behind me.
And the fact that I just thought that sentence surprises the hell out of me. A month ago I would have scoffed and brushed off the thought, but now, being with this woman, it feels almost normal.
Beau?
Lyselle was our housekeeper here when I was a little boy. There was only me, Charlie, and Eli then. The twins and Gabby hadn't been born yet. I loved her, I whisper, and then shake my head, surprised that a memory from so damn long ago could shake me. She was sweet and fun, and she loved to snuggle us while she read to us before our afternoon nap. Mallory smiles and says,
Curious George was your favorite.
Jesus. I'd forgotten that. I reply in turn, but still can't see her. She died here in this house while she was reading to us. Charlie and Eli were still too little to know what was happening, and so was I, really, but I was old enough to know that something was wrong.
Oh, you poor baby,
Mal says, and immediately walks into my arms, hugging me around my middle. Heart attack, I say, surprised to feel emotions that I'd long forgotten course through me. My dad told me many years later that she'd had a heart attack that killed her instantly.
That must have been traumatic, Mal says.
My mama had me in therapy for a couple of years, I confirm.
I kept asking for her and didn't understand why she wasn't coming back. That's an awfully young age to learn about death.
Indeed. I hope Lizelle isn't suffering.
Mal pulls out of my arms and looks to my left, then smiles softly. She says she's not suffering, but that she's waiting to move on because she wanted to apologize to you and tell you that she loved you.
I nod and feel my throat close up with the flood of emotion that's suddenly sitting on my chest. She has nothing to apologize for. She didn't do anything wrong. She should move on and be happy.
And then just like that, my chest is light again, and Mallory takes a deep breath and glances about, then smiles up at me.
She's gone.
Good.
I take Mal's hand in mine and lead her into the bedroom, leaving the French doors open so the salty sea air can drift inside. Are you okay?
I'm actually just fine,
she replies with a smile.
Almost energized.
Really?
Mm-hmm,
she says, and begins unbuttoning my shirt, her fingers moving slowly but surely down my torso until she reaches my pants.
You made some promises earlier.
Promises? I don't remember making any promises. I love it when she gets flirty.
There was some strong, flirty language,
she says, and pops the button on my fly, then lets my pants pull around my ankles.
That's a promise?
Oh, yeah.
She takes my already throbbing cock in her fist and pulls up, then down, firmly gripping me. The breath hisses through my teeth as I sink my fingers in her hair, careful not to force her to me, but needing something to grab onto.
I'm fond of this.
So glad you approve,
I mutter, then let my head fall back as she licks me from balls to tip, then wraps those fucking sexy lips around me and proceeds to give me the best blowjob of my goddamn life.
Jesus, Mallory.
She purrs, and it's almost enough to make me explode. Her hands working me over firmly and that mouth wrapped around me is the sexiest thing I've ever seen. But I want this to last. So I grip her by the shoulders and bring her to her feet, spin us around, and guide her down to the bed.
I wasn't done,
she says with a pout. Unless you want this to be over before it really starts, I had to stop you, sugar. I pull her skirt up around her waist and just about swallow my tongue when I see that she's not wearing panties.
I ditched them earlier,
she says with a sassy smile, as if she can read my mind.
What with you making promises and all?
Her sassiness both delights me and makes me want to slow things down a bit, draw it out longer, make her writhe in pleasure. So rather than plunge inside her and have my way with her the way I want to, I kiss her exposed navel, then bite the soft, slightly rounded flesh beneath it. Mallory isn't stick thin, and I prefer her this way. She wears her curves like most women would wear a fancy gown, proudly and confidently, and it's fucking sexy as hell. She's comfortable in her skin, which makes me comfortable too. I can't stop touching her, dragging my fingertips up and down her sides, over her hips, into that smooth apex of skin just above the promised land.
You're so damn good with your hands,
she moans and bites her lip as she grips into the quilt on the bed to anchor herself. I'd much prefer she grab onto me. Slipping my fingers through her slick lips, I bury my face in her neck and kiss her, then bite the sensitive skin just below her ear.
Shit,
she whispers, then contracts tightly around my fingers, almost making me lose control. I want to fuck her, hard.
Please,
she pleads, raising her hips off the bed. Please what?
Inside me.
She grips my cock and I can't hold back any longer. I let her guide me to her and slip just the head inside. Look at me. She opens her violet eyes and watches me avidly as I sink balls deep and brush a lock of hair off her cheek.
You're beautiful, Mallory.
She bites her lip again, unable to reply as I begin to move in a long, slow rhythm, taking us both on the ride of our lives.
And this moment, this woman, all of this is mine.
Her eyes widen in surprise, and then she cups my face sweetly in her hands.
It's ours,
she says with a smile and tightens around me, almost making my eyes fucking cross.
Yes, baby, it's ours.
The Hemingway house was fantastic,
Mallory says the next afternoon as we sit on lounge chairs under a cabana, lazily watching the water.
I had no idea there were so many cats.
He was the original crazy cat lady.
She smiles over at me and my heart catches.
I don't think they were all his. They've reproduced quite a lot since his day.
True.
I reach over and take her hand in mine, kiss her knuckles the way I always do, then rest our hands on my thigh. She's enthralled with watching the water, and I'm enthralled with watching her. She's in a black two-piece suit, a matching cover thing, and her hair is in a ponytail high on her head. She looks young and vibrant and happy. And fuck me, she makes me so happy I hardly recognize the feeling, because I've never felt it before. I've always been dedicated to my family and my business, and women were a fun distraction from time to time. And now I can't imagine my life without her in it. I'm in love with her.
Why are you staring at me like that? She asks.
Like what?
Like you're not quite sure what to do with me?
I snicker and gather my wits about me. I'm not quite sure what to do with you.
Oh, you knew exactly what to do with me last night.
Her smile is sexy and fun, exactly like last night. It was fun and sexy. True, but I was just wondering if I should feed you. She tips her head to the side.
I could eat. The sea air makes me hungry.
We have water in New Orleans.
It's the river, she says with a shrug. It smells, looks, sounds different. Although you're right, I'm always hungry at home too, as you can see.
She holds her hands out to the side, gesturing to her curves, and then laughs. You look perfect to me, I reply honestly.
Well, good, she says. Let's go in and eat.
I could run in and put something together, then bring it back out here. She thinks it over, then stands and holds her hand out for mine.
I'd like to go in out of the heat for a bit.
She pulls me out of my seat and we walk inside, sighing in delight when we hit the air-conditioned house. The air here by the ocean isn't as hot as if we were away from the water, but it's still warm.
What should I make us?
She asks and opens the fridge, staring inside. I grip her waist and pull her away from the appliance, boost her onto a stool at the island, and shake my head. You can sit there and look beautiful while I throw something together.
You can cook?
Of course I can cook.
Do you like to cook?
Good question, I reply with a chuckle. I guess they're two different things. I don't mind it. My mama made sure that we all knew how to cook.
I'm surprised you didn't have people to do that for you.
She plucks a grape from the bowl I just set on the counter and takes a bite, then holds the other half of it out to me. Mom and Dad were pretty traditional. I reply and pull out the fixings for grilled cheese with ham and tomato sandwiches. We did have a housekeeper who came twice a week to spruce the place up. I mean, there were six kids, and Mom is no glutton for punishment.
Good plan, Mallory replies. Hell, I have a girl who comes in once a month just to deep clean for me, and I'm only one person.
Exactly, but they gave us all chores to do, and Mama had us help with the cooking all the time. So all of us can cook. Not all of us love it.
Gotcha.
She says with a wink.
I think that's a great way to raise kids. It ensures that you're not all spoiled brats who can't live in the real world.
Well, Gabby was pretty spoiled because she was the baby, but she's not a brat, and she can definitely live in the real world. She had her son at 19 years old.
Wow,
she replies, not with censure or judgment.
That must have been rough.
She had us, I say, and set the sandwiches in the pan to grill up. And Sam is amazing. And then she met Reese, and he's a good father.
That's wonderful. I didn't meet Reese or the little ones when we were at the inn, but Gabby is a really great woman. I like her very much.
I'm glad. I grin and flip the sandwiches. She and I were always the closest. Not that I don't love all of my siblings, and surprisingly we all get along very well, but Gabby and I have a special bond. Until she married Reese, I lived on the inn property so I could look over everything.
I love that. She says with a sweet smile. It sounds a lot like Lena and me. We don't live far from each other.
Have you always known each other?
Yes, our grandmothers were best friends when they were small too and stayed friends their whole lives. So Lena and I grew up almost like sisters. And because of what we can do, there were many times that we were each other's only friend. She's a great person.
I like her, I reply honestly. I like that she's so loyal to you and she's pretty funny.
No one like her.
Mal agrees with a laugh.
And this looks delicious, thank you.
My pleasure. I reply and stand on the other side of the island while we eat. She's leaning on her elbows, casually eating, and my hips are leaning against the countertop. We can't take our eyes off each other. So you bring up an interesting topic. I begin and reach for a dill pickle, then pop it in my mouth.
Okay. What are your thoughts on children?
She stops chewing and stares at me for a moment, then sets a sandwich down and wipes her fingers on her napkin. In what context?
As in, do you want to have children one day? She sighs and also reaches for a pickle.
Honestly, I don't know.
What are your concerns?
Are we really having this conversation?
I just smirk and raise a brow, waiting for her to continue.
I have genetic paranormal abilities, she says slowly, not looking me in the eyes anymore. That concerns me because it's not something easy to be saddled with.
I can see that, I reply, trying to keep the light tone to our conversation. What if that wasn't a factor?
It's always going to be a factor.
Humor me. She shrugs and takes a bite. If it wasn't a factor, I would say yes, I want kids. Not six, she says with a smile, but a couple. You?
I like kids,
I reply honestly. Also surprised that I brought it up, but finding myself wanting to know everything about her, and I love her. I don't see myself without her. Kate is about to have a baby, and Gabby has two already. I'd like to have some of my own. She smiles and rests her chin in her hand.
What?
You're cute, she says. Bullshit. No, I'm not cute.
You are when you talk about having kids,
she says, and then laughs when I glare at her.
You get this sweet, excited look in your eyes. It's cute.
Say that again and I'll bend you over that counter and show you how very not cute I am, sugar. She just shrugs without concern and takes another bite of her lunch.
You don't scare me. I think it's awesome that the idea of having children makes you happy. I'm sure that whomever is lucky enough to give them to you will love it too.
She stands to set her empty plate in the sink, washes her hands, then turns back to me with a forced smile.
Shit.
Did I just upset you?
I don't know why you would.
She stutters, and I know it's a lie. We agreed at the start that this isn't a game, Mallory. No lies. She sighs and rubs her temple.
That was a stupid thing to agree to.
No, I don't think it was. I stay where I am, not touching her, just watching her. What's wrong?
Really, nothing's wrong.
Something is bothering you.
Okay, here's the truth. I don't want to tell you.
I nod and cross to her now, nudging her face up with my finger under her chin. That's better. I didn't mean to upset you.
I'll be just fine,
she says and smiles in earnest now.
Shall we go back outside and watch the water until the sunset?
Is that what you'd like to do? She nods happily. Then sit by the water for the rest of the day it is, sugar. We grab fresh bottles of water and walk out to our seats under the cabana. The wind has rustled our towels, so we take a moment to straighten everything out and then relax, watching a school of dolphins play not far offshore.
I can see why you love to come here, she says softly. I would be here all the time.
We can come whenever you like, I reply, not missing the fleeting frown that crosses her beautiful face. I wish she'd talk to me. I like to come a few times a year.
Do you own homes in other places?
The house I'm renovating in New Orleans is the only property I own in my name, I reply. But my family owns places all over the world. Travel is a big part of our jobs, as our company is globally sought after, and my father, and let's be honest, Eli, wanted a home base rather than hotels. So we own apartments in London, New York, and San Francisco. There's this property here in Florida, and that's it for now.
That's a lot,
she says, hugging her knees to her chest. In the past 20 minutes, she's withdrawn from me. This won't be tolerated. But she's stubborn like me, so I can't just demand that she speak.
Why are women so difficult?
We sit in silence for a while, watching the waves and the seabirds. I can't change the fact that my family is wealthy, I say at last. She whips her gaze to mine. I understand that it's unusual and I can see where it could be intimidating for many people, but damn it, I work very hard. I won't apologize for being successful.
No.
She stands and straddles my lap, holding my face in her hands.
I'm not asking you to apologize for that, and I never would. You're right, it's a lot to take in, but it's who you are, and I respect you very much.
I plant my hands on her back, holding her close. Then tell me what's wrong. Why did you pull away just now? What did I say that's bothering you?
Are you sure that you're not the psychic?
She asks, trying to smile. I wait, watching emotions roll over her face. If
Finally, her shoulders drop and she looks at me with tear-filled eyes.
It's dumb.
No, it's not dumb, baby. She nods.
Yeah, it is. But I can't help it.
I brush a tear away with my thumb. Seeing her cry is killing me.
What is it?
She bites her lip and then says,
I don't want to think about another woman having your babies. It just makes me sad and jealous, and then I get pissed, and that's dumb, because you want babies and someone should have them for you.
I try to speak, but now that she's talking, she's not stopping, so I decide not to interrupt.
I know that I'm not the woman who will have kids with you, and someday I won't see you or your family anymore. And that's sad to me, because I really like all of you. But when you decide to move on, it'll be awkward for me to still be friends with the girls, and I'm really going to miss them.
Wow, this is a lot of thinking, I say with a sigh and pull her down into my arms, cradling her.
Shh, Mal, you're getting worked up over things that aren't happening. But they will. I don't have to be a psychic to know it.
Bullshit. I'm completely in love with you. I'm not going anywhere, and when the time is right to have children, it's going to be with you. But she's not ready to hear those words yet, and frankly, I'm not ready to say them. This is ours, I remind her, and it's right here. She nods and fists her hand in my shirt, holding on. I tighten my hold on her and kiss the crown of her head. I'm right here, baby.
Chapter 13, Mallory. I loved being in Florida with Beau, but it's good to be home. The shop ran well without me, and I don't know if that makes me proud or feel a little like I'm useless. I'm going to choose pride. Beau is sound asleep beside me, resting peacefully. He doesn't snore, at least not that I've ever heard, although I'm usually asleep too. I've found that since I've been with Beau, I rarely have insomnia. I think it's because I feel so safe when I'm with him that sleep comes easily. But not tonight. I'm physically exhausted. It's been a busy week at work, and I started going to the gym with Lena. I'm not sure why, other than she begged because she doesn't like to go alone, and that way I get to see her more. But she likes to go at 6 in the morning, before school, so basically she hates me. I snort and shake my head at myself. I guess I'm a bit dramatic when I'm tired and I can't sleep. Maybe I should wake Beau for a round 2. I glance over at him and feel myself soften. He's so relaxed. I don't have the heart to wake him. And round 1 was something to write home about, so I really have nothing to complain about. So I reach for my journal and begin writing about my day. I like to keep a gratitude journal, where I talk about all of the positive things that happened that day, or whenever I have time to spend with it. We always remember all of the bad things that happen. I certainly don't have to write those down. But I want to remember the good as well. I'm only 1 page in when my eyes are too heavy and unfocused to continue, so I set it aside, lie down, and give in to sleep. I blink my eyes open and reach over to turn out the light, but movement from the corner of the room has me sitting upright and scowling. I don't allow spirits in this house. The tall man sitting in my grandmother's rocking chair simply smiles and pats his knee in time with the rhythm of the chair. I know, and I'm sure sorry for intruding, but you're a tough woman to catch up with. I tilt my head to the side, no longer afraid, but interested to know who this is. I'm Beau's papa, Beauregard Boudreaux. He smiles and nods his head toward me. And you're the beautiful woman who has captured his heart. Beau's daddy is a romantic? I ask with a smile and leave the bed. I glance back at Beau to see that he's still asleep. This is a dream, Mallory. He can't hear us. But we're leaving anyway. I have some things to show you. He winks and stands, holds his hand out for mine, and when I slip it in his grasp, we're suddenly not in my house anymore. Where are we? When are we? He replies with a wink. I thought I'd show you some of my memories. Why? Because I love my family, and it seems that you're going to be a part of them now.
You're a lucky girl. I know that they're wealthy. For Christ's sake, child, you're way too focused on the money. That's not why you're lucky. He shakes his head, and I feel like a scolded child. These people are the most loving, supportive, caring people you could ever have in your life. But you're not biased, I reply with a laugh, and then look where he's pointing. There's a woman, about my age, chopping vegetables and giving orders to 3 children. Charlie, that's perfect. You're sure learning my gumbo recipe quickly. Your daddy will love it. The little girl's smile shines with excitement. It's special. If you want to know why, I'm a romantic, Mr. Boudreaux says as he watches the woman. It's because of her, the love of my life. We were married for almost 4 decades when I left. I would have been married for 1 million more if it meant I got to be with her. I glance away from the children and watch him. She's beautiful. Inside and out, he agrees with a nod. Much better than I ever deserved. But she gave me 6 gorgeous children, was by my side through thick and thin. And let me tell you, there was a lot of sin, and no, I don't mean financially. I'm human, so I wasn't perfect. But I loved her the best way I knew how. Who are the other 2 children? I ask. Eli and Declan. Charlie and Eli were always inseparable. They're still close. You watch over them. Of course I do, he says with a smile. They're my crew. And now, you're part of that crew as well. I love him, I whisper, surprised that I said it aloud. It's been hard to admit that. Why? Because I think he deserves better than me, I reply, and watch Mrs. Boudreaux with her children. They're smiling, laughing, enjoying their time together. I don't think I can give him what you had. Nonsense, he replies. If you love each other, you make the rest work. I'm going to tell you what I told my own children all of their lives. You can't control the wind, but you can adjust your sails. You'll set the right course for you as a couple. I threw up on the boat, I reply in horror. I'm not a good sailor. He tips his head back and laughs, right from the belly, making me smile too. Our Gabby doesn't have the stomach for it either, but the analogy works all the same. I sigh, nod, and follow him when he leaves the kitchen, headed toward the living room. We're still in their home, but time has passed because the children are older. Is that Ben? I ask, pointing at a skinny boy who's sitting with Savannah. They're reading together. I'd recognize her anywhere. It is, he says with a nod. I love that boy as if he were my own. He's grown into a good man, on his own path, just like all of my children. He looks at Savannah with a lot of love in his eyes, I remark. He still does, he agrees. I wish my daughter would open her eyes and see it, that she would accept it. They need each other. She'll accept it when she's ready, I reply. I've felt it when she and I are together. I can't tell the future, but I know that you're right. They're for each other, but it won't happen until she's ready for it. I don't think she'd know what to do with those feelings quite yet. I look up at him and see the sadness in his eyes, and I know that he knows. Her ex-husband hurt her, I say simply. And I wasn't there to kill him. He replies, then glances down at me. He's going to try to hurt her again before it's all done. And Ben will be there, I reply, then rub his arm, wanting to reassure him. He'll be there. He nods and leads me to another room again, and I can see that more time has passed. Is that Gabby? Yes, my poor, sweet girl. His face is soft with love as he looks at his youngest daughter. She's a good girl, who made a bad decision and got herself into trouble. We're in Gabby's bedroom, and she's sitting at the head of the bed, her knees drawn up to her chest, and she's crying. What's wrong? She's pregnant with our Sam, he says. She was so frightened to tell me, afraid of what I might think of her. He shakes his head, as if the thought bewilders him. I could only ever love her, Mallory. Our actions don't just affect us. and I won't say that it wasn't hard on the family to have Sam arrive when he did. But we adjusted those sails and went where the wind took us.
She's a great mom, I reply, remembering what Beau told me about her.
She really is.
He agrees and leads me down the hall to another bedroom. We walk inside, and many years have passed now. Mr. Boudreaux is lying in the bed, and Beau is a grown man, sitting next to him.
Here, he says to Beau, holding up a coin. This was one of two of the first dollars made in our company. I'm going to give the other one to Eli, since the two of you are running it now.
Papa, Beau says, his voice cracking with emotion, you're going to get well. You'll be back in your office before you know it.
We both know that isn't true,
his father says as he gently lays the coin in Beau's hand.
So I need to say some things to you. I won't say goodbye to you,
Beau says adamantly.
I understand. I'm not quite ready for that either. But I do want to tell you how damn proud I am of you, son. You and all of your siblings are exceptional people. I couldn't want more. I know that you will take care of your mother and the others. Papa, thank you, Beau. Thank you for being my son and my friend. I admire you. Great things are in store for you, my boy.
Beau simply nods, unable to speak, and my heart breaks for him. I know what it is to know that the person you love and admire most is about to leave you forever. I'm so sorry, I whisper.
It was hard on all of us, he says to me and pats my shoulder. I wasn't ready to leave, and they weren't ready to say goodbye. I don't know if it's fair to say it was hardest on Beau, because it was difficult in different ways for each of them. But he definitely shouldered the burden, as the eldest of the family, to step into my shoes.
They're big shoes to fill, I reply with a smile.
All my boys wear the same size, he says,
and leads me out of the room, away from a crying man, grieving for his father.
And they're doing quite well filling the shoes.
We pass a room where the music from a saxophone plays loudly.
And that's my Declan, always losing himself in music. It's how he copes.
He's amazing. I got to hear him at his wife's bar not long ago. He's a talented man.
That he is. I will sometimes go to listen to him when I'm lonesome for him. It helps me feel better.
Mr. Boudreaux, why are you still here? You can move on. You don't have to stay and miss them all so much.
I won't leave my love, he replies,
and when I look around, I see that we're back in my bedroom, and I'm fast asleep in my bed.
I want to look in on my family, Mallory. I sometimes come to them in their dreams, and I can see them live their lives, marry their own loves, have children. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
They miss you, I reply, then rise up on my tiptoes to kiss his cheek. They miss you just as much.
He smiles gently. I know.
I wake slowly, blinking against the bright sunshine coming through the window. Beau's not in bed anymore, and the linens are cool where he was, so he's been up for a while. I glance over to see the rocking chair barely rocking, and I smile, remembering my time with Beau's father. What a special gift, to be introduced to his family through his eyes. I leave the bed, wrap a robe around me, and go in search of Beau. I find him down in the living room, his laptop on his lap, and his phone pressed to his ear.
Yes, I can make that deadline. Make sure my assistant is CC'd in the email so she can add it to my calendar. Thank you.
He ends the call, and I curl up next to him, rest my head on his shoulder, and hug his arm.
Are you okay?
He asks. Oh, yes. I kiss his shoulder, then hug him again.
Funny. I can smell my father.
I glance up and smile at him. We just had a lovely chat.
Did you?
He tucks a lock of my hair behind my ear.
You must have been dreaming.
I lay my head back on his shoulder. Is the coin in your pocket? He stills.
Excuse me?
The coin. Is it still in your pocket?
He reaches in his pocket and pulls out the dollar coin, holding it up for me to see.
This coin?
That's the one. Your father is a smart man, Beau. I feel him sigh, and his hand is a bit shaky when he returns the coin to his pocket.
Jesus, Mallory.
I'm sorry. I don't want to scare you.
Not scaring me,
he mutters and kisses my head. But you're full of surprises.
It's so nice to finally meet you, Mallory,
Beau's mother says the following Sunday.
I'm glad you could join us for dinner. I've heard a lot about you.
Thank you for having me, I reply. Mrs. Boudreaux is petite like her daughters, with salt-and-pepper hair and a warm smile. I immediately like her.
I've heard quite a lot about you as well. Well, then, we should chat and get to know each other better.
She loops her arm through mine, and I'm immediately hit with feelings of deep love. This woman adores her family.
Are you from around here?
Yes, ma'am. My best friend's grandmother said she went to school with your eldest sister.
Really? What is her name?
Sophia Turner, I reply, and raise my chin for the blow to come when she remembers her. She tilts her head for a moment, trying to remember, and then her eyes light with the memory.
I think I remember her. Did she have pretty blonde hair, about my height?
She still does, I reply with a nod.
Oh, we must have them join us for dinner sometime,
she replies with a genuine smile, not one ounce of disgust in her voice. I'm sure she and Lena would enjoy that.
Lena's a hoot and a half, Charlie says from the stove. I'm making Mama's gumbo tonight, sugar. I hope you like it.
You've been making it for years, I reply before I can stop myself.
I'm sure it's great.
The house looks pretty much the same as my dream, aside from some updating and color changes through the years. It's inviting and homey, and I can feel Mr. Boudreaux here. But that's it. No other spirits are here.
I don't like green beans, a young boy says with a frown.
This is Sam, Gabby says and ruffles his hair. You liked green beans just fine last week when we had them.
Keen,
the little girl in Gabby's arms says with a smile, showing off a mouthful of tiny teeth.
You like green beans, baby girl, Mrs. Boudreaux says as she kisses the baby's head and takes her from Gabby's arms. This is Ailish. She's almost a year old now, and she likes to repeat everything her brother says.
She's beautiful. I smile at the little girl, who suddenly gets shy and hides her face against her grandmother's neck.
Where are the boys? Van asks as she tosses a salad.
They're out back, I reply. Beau said they had some work to talk about. She rolls her eyes.
Clearly not, because I'm not out there with them.
They're talking about you.
What?
I glance around in surprise.
Why? Because the boys are nosier than a henhouse full of hens,
Charlie replies with a laugh,
and they want the scoop.
I think I'd like the scoop, too. Van tilts her head, watching me. You know the scoop. My brother's in love with you.
He's never said that.
The women all look at each other, then start laughing.
Oh, darling. It's written all over his handsome face, Callie says and pats my shoulder. Trust us, he's smitten.
Well, I don't know what to say, so I just don't say anything at all. Suddenly, Ben walks in through the back door and stops short when all of us are staring at him.
What did I do?
Nothing. Are you guys talking about Mallory? Gabby asks.
He says, completely lying.
No, we have other things to talk about than women.
Right.
Charlie rolls her eyes.
Tell Simon that I'll fill him in later.
Ben grabs a few beers from the fridge, glances at Van with the same lovesick eyes he had as a teenager, and walks back out of the house.
Speaking of someone being smitten,
Gabby says, but Van pins her with a glare.
I'm not discussing this again.
Stop it.
Sorry,
Gabby says, holding her hands up in surrender. Mrs. Boudreaux passes the baby back to Gabby. I should get the bread in the oven.
Do you have a moment to talk privately? I ask her.
Of course, darling, she says, and nods at Callie. Can you put the bread in the oven?
Sure thing. Callie winks at me as I lead Mrs. Boudreaux to the living room and turn to see her eyebrow cocked.
Have you been here before?
I bite my lip and curse myself. I shouldn't be walking around in here like I own the place.
Of course not. I'm sorry.
I clasp my hands at my waist, wondering if this is a huge mistake.
You can say whatever is on your mind.
I nod and take a deep breath. I don't know if anyone has told you that I have some abilities that are, well, different.
Yes, I heard all about the seance, she says with a smile. Sounds like it was mighty interesting.
I nod, relieved that she doesn't seem to think I'm a basket case. Well, I would like to pass along a message. I spoke with your husband the other night. I expect her to go pale, to sink into the nearest chair, to act shocked. But instead, she just smiles at me, so I keep going. He's with you quite often.
Oh, I know that, dear.
You can see him?
No, but I feel him. I smell him. I talk to him all of the time.
I relax more, relieved that I'm not going to be thrown out on my ass.
Well, it seems my message isn't needed.
But he loves you very much. She nods and reaches out to hug me tightly.
This may not be news to me, but it sure is wonderful to hear. Thank you, sweet girl. Now, let's go eat.
Chapter 14, Mallory. I'm standing in an unusually chilly rainstorm with Lena and Miss Sophia next to my grandmama's grave 2 weeks later. Today is the worst day of the year for me. I grieve, just as if it happened last week.
I can't believe it's been 10 years, Lena whispers and loops her arm around my shoulders.
I lean my head on hers as Miss Sophia steps up to my other side and gently takes my hand in hers.
It's been a blink of an eye, Miss Sophia says, and gives my hand a squeeze. Do you see her?
My head whips around. No, I can never see her. Can you see her?
She looks over at me with sad eyes. I can always see her.
So unfair,
I mutter and let all of my psychic walls down, opening myself up completely, hoping with everything in me that I might catch just a glimpse of her. Can you see her, Lena?
Only in dreams, Lena says. Seeing the dead isn't one of my gifts, and I'm perfectly okay with that.
You should be, especially when we're in a cemetery, I reply and look around us at all of the spirits that seem to drift between the headstones. It looks like something out of a movie.
But it's not. It's real. And I don't like cemeteries in the least. It's the one place that creeps me the fuck out, because I can see hundreds of spirits all at once. But never Grandmama.
You can close it up, Lena says softly. I can feel the tension, Mal. You don't have to keep yourself open here.
I might see her, I reply, and tighten my hold on Miss Sophia's hand. So on this day, I'll keep myself open.
Well, then we'll stay with you, Miss Sophia says with a nod. She loved you fiercely.
Not fiercely enough to stay.
Her gaze whips over to mine.
Do you think she chose death over you?
She chose to continue to use her gifts, knowing that it could one day be too much and take her away.
I shrug, surprised that I'm still harboring so much bitterness.
And it did finally do just that.
Children, Miss Sophia mutters with a deep sigh. Mallory.
But before she can continue, I'm suddenly drowned by darkness. I can feel Miss Sophia and Lena, but I can't see them. I can't see anything. But I can feel the evil that has washed over me. It's absolute and painful. A bright red light rises into the sky, casting everything in the deep blood red. Menacing red.
fucking horrible, Red. The other spirits have fled, and I'm trapped where I stand as a dark mass begins to take form. Darkness, be gone. This child I protect. It's Miss Sophia, chanting. Touch her no more, as I command it, so mote it be. She repeats the words, getting fiercer each time, until the black mass retreats, and suddenly we are standing in the cold, wet cemetery again, just as we were before. It's gotten stronger, Lena says, holding on to me like her life depends on it. Thank you, I say to Miss Sophia, still clutching her hand. What in the actual fuck was that? I've never felt anything so strong, never experienced anything like it in my life, except when we were at the inn for the seance. But this is 100 times stronger. Are you going to finally talk to me about this? Miss Sophia asks, her eyes fully dilated, her blonde hair still swirling in the breeze that the spell conjured. My mouth opens and closes as I'm completely dumbfounded. I turn to Lena. Did you tell her about before? Oh, I should have, she replies and rolls her eyes. I sure should have. How did you know? I demand. Darling, that's what I do. I cook and I know things. Wasn't that a Game of Thrones line? I ask my grandmother's headstone, trying to lighten the mood while I also try to figure out what in the hell I'm going to say. Why didn't you bring this to me immediately? Miss Sophia demands. Because it wasn't important enough to tell you, I reply, and wither under her glare. Miss Sophia is the gentlest soul I know, and the most powerful witch in the South. She's kind of a big deal. I'm prepared for her to let loose with a rare moment of yelling, so I'm shocked when she simply takes a deep breath, closes her eyes to let it out, and says softly, I should have told you this long ago. Told me what? Yeah, told her what? Lena adds. First, tell me exactly what happened the first time you encountered this being. I frown and glance at Lena. We were at the seance. I pause and stare up into the sky. It's still raining, soaking us, but we don't run for cover. We hardly feel it at all as I keep talking. I had just finished talking with the spirits who had something to say, and I hadn't put my guard back up yet. I glance over at Lena. She was holding my hand to ground me, since I hadn't done anything like that in years. At least you thought to do that, Miss Sophia replies. It had gone well, I continue, and the girls seemed happy with what they heard. And then suddenly, there was a darkness. That's the best way to describe it. Did it speak? She asks. No, I slammed the door and it was gone. It happened in less than 2 seconds. That's plenty of time, she sighs and shakes her head, paces away to stare off for a moment, then nods and returns to me. I should have talked to you about the circumstances of your grandmother's death years ago, but I was trying to spare you any fear and pain that would come with the knowledge. I know how she died, I reply with a frown. You know some of it, she says, and turns to walk back to the car. I'm cold and wet, and so are you. Let's go back to the house where it's warm, and I have my things around us to keep us safe, and I'll explain it all. I don't think I'm going to like this, I mutter to Lena. I can guarantee you won't. I don't know what she's going to say, but she's got her stern look on, and that always scares me. Have a seat, Miss Sophia says when we're settled in her kitchen with hot tea. We take our places and sit, waiting anxiously to hear what is going through her head. First of all, I want to tell you that I'm very disappointed that you didn't come to me sooner with this. I truly didn't think it was important, I say again. It was so fast, and after I shut it out, it hasn't come back until now. It is important, she replies adamantly. Did you feel it too? She asks Lena. Oh, yes, Lena says, nodding. And she's right. It was fast, and then it was gone. Otherwise, I would have told you myself. If this ever happens again, you come to me right away. Do you understand?
We're both flabbergasted as we nod in agreement. I've never seen her like this. She looks scared, and that makes me shiver to the bone.
What is going on? I ask. And how does this have anything to do with my grandmother?
You know that she died because an evil presence embedded itself inside her head so deeply that she couldn't defend herself.
Lena and I both nod.
But you don't know how or why that happened.
It happened because she chose to help the police find missing children, I reply. And she did, hundreds of them. I may not love that it eventually took her away from me, but she helped families, and she was proud of that.
Yes, and she chose to do that because her own daughter had been kidnapped and killed when she was a little girl, and she couldn't find her.
I gasp and sit back, my jaw dropped, and feel the world fall out from under me. That's not true.
I'm so sorry, sugar, but it is true.
She reaches over to pat my hand, but I sit back out of her way. I can't be touched right now. I don't want to feel the pain or see the memories going through her head. She never mentioned it.
No, she never spoke of it.
And your parents died when you were so young. There was no one else to tell you.
Except you.
Lena hasn't said anything. Her eyes are glassy with unshed tears, and she's staring across the room as if she's trying to process it all.
It wasn't my place to tell you when your grandmama was still alive, Miss Sophia replies gently. And then, when she was gone, well, how does one bring up that conversation?
My mouth is suddenly dry. I take a sip of tea. Why are you telling me now?
Because it's what put everything into motion. That sweet little angel Melissa.
Melissa was my aunt's name? I ask.
Yes. She was only 5 when she was taken, and your poor grandmama tried so hard to be able to see where she was. But it was no use. She couldn't see it. And a week later, Melissa was found. She didn't survive. And then your grandmama was a woman on a mission. She wasn't going to let other families go through what she and your grandpapa did. Her only goal in life was to help children come home safely, and later, to take care of you.
But how could it kill her? I demand, still not fully understanding. She would never tell me. She just said that it was dangerous, and she was willing to do it if it meant she helped even one child be reunited with their family.
Evil is strong,
Miss Sophia replies. Her voice is strong again, almost emotionless, as if she doesn't want to give the word any power at all.
My sweet friend was the strongest psychic I knew. Well, until you.
I stare at her in horror.
Me?
Oh, yes, you.
She nods sadly, then continues.
She was powerful, and she was just so good. She had trained herself to translate symbols, to listen, to know. It was years in the making, but she was the best there was. She didn't even need to hold a piece of the victim's clothing or go to where they lived. She could reach out and search from her living room.
I can travel that way. I think of the dream a couple of weeks ago and how I often travel to different places in my dreams.
Yes, you have many of the same gifts, she replies with a smile, and many other different ones. The dangerous part of opening your mind to find evil is that you're essentially given that evil a door to walk into, if you're not careful.
So, a living person, also psychic, walked into her head and killed her?
I know it sounds impossible, but essentially, yes. Another powerful, evil psychic living man did just that.
And what does that have to do with what happened today?
I believe it's the same man, she replies, completely throwing me.
What? No, that man went to jail.
He was admitted to a hospital for the criminally insane because he was given an insanity sentence, she replies.
And everything in me goes dead cold. He's out?
She nods.
And how do you know it was him?
Because I can see him, she replies.
And that's it. That's all I can handle. I stand and begin pacing, tears streaming down my face.
I don't psychically see living people, I say, feeling everything in me beginning to break. I see them once they're dead.
Yes, and that's one of your differences.
So why is this happening? I'm just lost. I don't understand, and I don't want it.
That detective called you, Lena says, as if she's just woken up and joined us.
What detective?
I think her name was Detective Williams. Wait, she's a lieutenant now.
In New York? Miss Sophia asks, her eyes wide and not a little frightened.
Yes, Lena replies. Remember, Mal?
Of course I remember, I snap.
He's back at it, Miss Sophia says, and closes her eyes, letting out a long breath. He's hurting people again.
I can't help, I reply. And yes, that makes me feel like an asshole. But I don't have the same abilities that Grandmama had, and I can't help.
I'm not telling you to help, Miss Sophia says. But he's worried that you will try to help, and he's targeted you.
How does he even know about me?
He might have read the obituary, Lena says. You were mentioned in it.
I shake my head and continue to pace back and forth, too wound up to sit down. I didn't ask for any of this.
None of us ask for it, Miss Sophia replies.
Some do. Some search it out. I never wanted it. I just wanted to be a normal woman who owns a store and has an awesome boyfriend.
But that's not all you are, Lena says and shrugs.
I'm sorry, but it's the truth. You've always had a hard time admitting it, accepting it. But it's who you are, Mal. You need to start seeing the glass as half full.
Really? I demand and snort out a laugh. The glass is half full because I can see dead people and a crazy psycho psychic is trying to kill me?
Seems like the glass is half empty to me.
You're missing the point, Miss Sophia interrupts. The point is, the glass is refillable. Fill your glass with the love of your man and your successful shop and your family and friends. And when the glass empties because of the unpleasantness of your gifts, go back to those places to fill it up again.
Stop being